It's the morning show on 93.5 WMWV, Music Without Boundaries. Roy Prescott here with you this morning. If you're a longtime listener to WMWV, you know we've been playing REM music for years and years, decades really. And we talk a lot about the music, but not so much about the history of the band sometimes. So I'm joined now by Robert Dean Lurie, because he has just written a new book called Begin the Begin, REM's Early Years. Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Good. It's great to be here today.
Well, we thank you so much for putting this book together and joining us today. I just thought I'd let you know that I did a little count of the REM songs we have in rotation here. We're playing on regular basis 46 different REM tunes.
Okay, so you go pretty deep in the catalog there.
Yes, we definitely do. And I think one of the best things about the book Begin the Begin, REM's Early Years, is the title. Because I remember back in 1986 when Life's Rich Pageant came out, I went to the record store, I bought it, I put it on the platter, and the first song was Begin the Begin, and that song blew me away. And that's one of my favorite songs of all time by the band.
So that song is fantastic. I was thinking about it this morning, actually, and that song musically gets put across as an anthem. It's very bold, declarative, loud guitars, loud singing. And if you really try to decipher the lyrics, there's a lot of hesitation and doubt, even as he's saying, let's begin again. He's saying, I can't even rhyme. You look to me for a reason, it's not there. So that was one of the really interesting things about Michael Stipe, particularly early on, is that he was a very charismatic frontman, but he's also an introvert, and he made his hesitation almost part of his act in a way that was pretty unusual. You'd see other people do stuff like this maybe around the same time, like David Byrne, but he just put a really interesting spin on things, and I think it was the combination of that straight-ahead music with that kind of skewed artistic sensibility and the fact that most of the time you didn't know what he was saying, but it evoked a feeling. That's a big part of REM's magic.
That is a real deep part of it. Now, you've written other books about music, but this one seems a little bit closer to your heart because you were in the Athens, Georgia area back in 1992, right?
Yeah, so I had to do a bit of mental time travel to write the book because I wasn't quite there at the time that I'm talking about. There's some really interesting coincidences. I was there early 90s. 92 is when I got there. I ended up in a dorm called Reed, and I had no idea at the time that this was the dorm that Bill Berry lived in, and I'm living on the fourth floor. There's no air conditioning. It had not been renovated. Nothing had been done to that place since he was there and since several other people in the book were there. So without knowing it, I was in the place. And so writing the book, like you said, it is more personal. I know these places. I know them physically. And I was there. It had obviously changed a lot since the early 80s, but it was also the same place. Some of the same restaurants and establishments and things were there, and a lot of the same people were there. So, yeah, it's absolutely close to my heart.
So at that time, Automatic for the People had been released, and as the band grew, they were still fairly well known for just hanging out in Athens and trying to keep things on the low key as they had throughout their career, growing slowly, right?
That's absolutely right. And Automatic for the People is significant because that's kind of the end of that. So that's the last album
right,
where everyone is still living in Athens. Shortly after that, Peter Buck was the first to move away. He moved to Seattle. And then you had them started, Michael Stipe was spending more time in Manhattan. They became less of a Athens band, less of a Southern band, and they became an American band. And that's just kind of an inevitable thing, I think, that happens when you become too big of a fish in a small pond. But I was very lucky to just be at the tail end of that, so you would see them around town. You would pretend that you didn't see them, and it was just very magic.
I think one of the interesting things you talk about in the prologue, that there have been biographies written about REM, but mostly by British authors.
Yeah, and I don't want that to come across like I'm throwing shade on,
right,
on the other writers, because I relied heavily on their research. I mean, it's just some amazing journalism has gone into telling the REM story. But yeah, REM, another interesting thing that I really didn't realize until I started digging deeply into this was right when they started to kind of decline here, they were actually really huge in Europe.
Right.
They were having a lot of success in the late 90s and 2000s with some of those later albums that weren't quite as loved in the U.S. Because they had changed a bit and Bill Berry was no longer in the band. So there's a huge following overseas, and particularly in the U.K., there's just a lot of devotion to R.E.M. But I know this from having written about bands from other countries. You're going to bring your own sensibility to it. So I wanted to bring my knowledge of the people of Athens to the conversation. So that's kind of the slot that I think this book filled.
And I think that maybe some of the details about some of the characters in the Athens area that helped R.E.M. with their growth, like William Orton Carleton and all, maybe didn't get enough writing about them either.
Absolutely, because if you're not from Athens, probably don't know who Ort is. Everyone in Athens knows who he is. Even people that don't know that they know Ort know him, because if you've just gone downtown in Athens, he's been sitting at a table next to you. And he's this very recognizable character. Now he has this huge flowing white beard. He has this very interesting dress sensibility and a very distinctive voice. And he's quite a storyteller. And so he's kind of the town historian, and it's kind of a joke in my mind that if all of the various bands of Athens are planets in a constellation, what's the sun? Well, maybe the sun is Ort, you know, because he's just always been there, and they all just, they come and go, and they circle around. So yeah, I definitely wanted to give him voice and put him in there, because he's been just pivotal, not just with R.E.M., but the B-52s. I mean, he was there at the ground floor of all that stuff.
Yeah, it's really fun to read about him. And I think another thing is the fact that we learned that, you know, we maybe in the radio world and as fans of the band realize that each album got stronger and stronger, and they were just becoming known worldwide. But in the beginning, those guys worked hard, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, they always did. They right. always did. But if you look at the itineraries for those early tours, it's just punishing, absolutely punishing schedule, particularly in 1985 when they did Fables of Reconstruction.
Right.
They had, I mean, the whole year they were just on the road, and it was pre-construction, and then, I don't know, there's maybe a pre-construction tour, then there was the reconstruction tour, post-reconstruction, you know. And the thing that's impressive, though, not only did they do these just back-to-back grueling shows and often played for a long time, but as I learned from their former tour manager, Chris Edwards, they would hang out after the show, and they would talk to everyone that wanted to talk to them. So, and he said, you know, you would see, like, a lot of people would not leave the concert hall, but you would see these clusters of people, and you could tell by the size of the cluster who might be at the middle of it, you know, so you have, like, a massive cluster of people trying to ask Michael Sipe questions about you know, what this or that song means. And then you might have another massive cluster where everyone wants to talk to Peter Buck, because Peter Buck is a great storyteller, and he'll talk to everyone. So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. They didn't need to do that.
No, that's...
And I'm sure that they were already wiped out, and yet they did.
Well, they were doing like we do in radio. We win them one fan at a time. And this book seems to be the story of the real R.E.M., which we're very excited to have a chance to chat with Robert Dean Lurie about Begin, R.E.M.'s early years. And Robert, our local independent bookstore, White Birch Books, is bringing in some copies of the book so that people can get it here locally. And I think that's fantastic.
Well, kudos to you, Roy, and kudos to White Birch Books. I really appreciate that.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time. The book is out now, Begin, R.E.M.'s Early Years. Thank you, Robert Dean Lurie, for joining us, and good luck with the book and in the future.
Thank you so much. It was great talking with you.
Well, all that being said, here's R.E.M.'s Begin on 93.5 WMWV, Music Without Boundaries.